What's the weather like with you?
That used to be a boring question.
Not anymore. Thanks to climate change, weather is increasingly unpredictable and extreme. People are developing new ways of coping with the effects of this new weather. Those methods for dealing with the effects of climate change are called climate adaptation. And that's what this and the next couple of episodes of Climate Solutions will be about. We'll hear from two top experts on climate adaptation to find out what it is, how it works, and how to finance it. First, I have with me Hannah van den Burg, climate adaptation and just resilience expert at the European Environment Agency. If you're wondering what just resilience is, we'll get to that. And from the European Investment Bank, we have Moa Westman, who is the EU bank's lead on the social dimensions of climate change. Well, so let's start by explaining what we mean by just resilience.
Of course. So briefly put, just resilience means that policymakers need to make sure that in all the policies and measures that they plan and implement to make sure that Europe becomes more resilient to climate change, that all those policies and measures are actually fair to all members in society. Because what we see is that those that are most disadvantaged tend to be more affected by climate change. People who are more disadvantaged in terms of their health, their age, or for instance, their socioeconomic status. And so we need to make sure that in all our efforts to make Europe more climate resilient, that we don't leave anyone behind.
So there's a social angle to climate change in that sense. Moa, when we talk about social programs and things that require, you know, social action, that comes with a price tag usually. So what is the cost of adaptation?
Well, the cost of adaptation is very high, of course, and especially it hits different countries and different people differently, and who bears those costs differ based on your socioeconomic vulnerabilities and your vulnerability to climate change that might differ across countries and regions, but also for different people in societies. So, for example, the cost for least developed countries to adapt to climate change are expected to rise up to $300 billion by 2030 annually.
$300 billion? Euros?
Dollars.
Wow. Wow. Yes, that. So I was asking about the price tag. That's a lot.
It is a lot. And if you put that in comparison to that only 14% of climate finance flows actually goes to least developed countries, you can really see who is bearing the brunt of climate change impacts.
Well, let's develop that. Let's look at what are the challenges that we're facing in terms of adaptation.
Sure. So looking at Europe, we're actually facing urgent climate risks. We're, of course, preparing ourselves for those risks, but we're not doing it fast enough. The rate at which these climate risks are increasing is actually much higher than the rate at which we as a society are preparing ourselves. We recently published the European Climate Risk Assessment from the European Environment Agency, which is the first of its kind. And this risk assessment shows that Europe is, in fact, the fastest warming continent in the world. So we're facing more frequent periods of extreme heat. We are also facing, in various regions across Europe, we're facing more downpours, more catastrophic flood events. But for instance, Southern Europe, on the other hand, faces more drought and we'll see a decline in rainfall. And all of these climate risks are affecting various systems of our society and will increase to do so. So for instance, our economy and our finance, our health and well-being, our biodiversity, our infrastructure, all of those aspects will be affected by climate risks and more so.
So you mentioned regions there where there's different things going on. That brings me to the next question, which is why do we need just resilience, I guess? Because, you know, our listeners will probably be familiar with the question of, just transition. You know, the idea that there are regions that we don't want them to be left behind by the green transition. So that's where the word just comes in. But how does just and resilience go together and why do we need it?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Indeed, the just transition in relation to mitigation, I think generally is a bit more known. than the aspect of justice when it comes to adaptation or resilience. So when it comes to just resilience, of course, policymakers need to make sure that we are preparing ourselves for climate risks and that we're building resilience. They need to do that in two ways. First of all, of course, they need to rapidly reduce CO2 emissions, but they also need to take and implement strong policies and measures on adaptation. So where does justice come into this? Well, what we see is that specific individuals or groups across society are more exposed to and more affected by climate change than others. So for instance, elderly people are generally much more affected by increased temperatures than average citizens. Another example, for instance, you see that low-income communities may take a lot longer to recover from a catastrophic flood event simply because it takes them longer to rebuild their house after it's been damaged by the flood because they don't have the resources to do so. So that's one aspect of just resilience, that people are more exposed to and affected by climate change, who are also more socially vulnerable in a way. But another aspect is that in the actions that decision makers take and policymakers take to build that resilience, we see that sometimes people are left behind, unintendedly, of course. What we see is that sometimes those that are most vulnerable don't actually benefit from adaptation actions, and that policies may even make existing inequalities worse. For instance, there may be a subsidy program that will help people make their house warmer in winter or cooler in summer, but that may only be accessible to people who actually own their homes rather than who rent it. And so people who rent their homes, who may already be in a more precarious social and financial situation, will actually end up having to spend more money on energy bills in the winter to keep their houses warm. So just resilience is important for two reasons. First of all, you could argue that we have a moral imperative or an ethical obligation to take justice into account in line with the European core values, the EU core values. But secondly, scientific evidence shows that taking justice into account actually can make adaptation more effective.
So, for example, in Djibouti, a fragile state facing climate change at the Horn of Africa, we are financing climate-resilient infrastructure to improve drinking water and sanitation services for 500,000 people, really bringing that climate-resilient infrastructure and access to a natural resource water that's really critical for development. We have one other strategy that we have is to work also through partners, and we have a partnership with the International Fund for Agriculture and Development to strengthen food security and reduce poverty and build climate resilience across Africa, Asia, and Latin America.
Moa, how does an institution like the European Investment Bank deal with those factors in terms of the investments that the bank makes in adaptation?
So we need the concept of just resilience to help steer our climate adaptation investment towards the people that are really bearing the unequal burdens of climate change. So that's how this framing is helping to steer investments. So we know that we need to direct more climate adaptation finance towards the people that are really most affected, so that we can look at our investments from that perspective. For example, if we see that we can support farmers to adapt to climate change through new technologies or by providing climate risk insurance through specific investments, we can do that. And having this just resilience lens helps us to think through our climate adaptation investments from also the social perspective.
Now, Hannah was talking about just resilience between, let's say, Southern Europe, where it's getting very, very hot, Northern Europe with the storms and so on. What's the global angle on this?
So, of course, outside of Europe, the climate crisis is really hitting people very hard already across Africa and Asia in particular, but also in other parts of the world. We have increasing heats, increasing changes in weather patterns and really affecting people that depend on natural resources and livelihoods for natural resources and the environment for their livelihoods. So it's really a crisis that is impacting people today. And then within those different communities, you see different vulnerabilities depending on your socioeconomic vulnerability already. So we see smallholder farmers, but also indigenous people in certain countries, women and non-binary bearing a heavier burden. So it's really an acute issue. And as we see also that certain countries don't have the same investment flows going to them to deal with these issues, that's a place where we can come in and help.
Thanks, Hanna van den Berg of the European Environment Agency and Moa Westman of the European Investment Bank. Next time on Climate Solutions, how to ensure that just resilience is included in policymaking. Subscribe to Climate Solutions to get each episode as it drops. We're starting this season with climate adaptation, but then we'll be reporting on a new climate project every week. They're all different, but each of them will make you look at the solutions to climate change in a new way. Listen to the previous seasons of Climate Solutions, too. This is our seventh season. We've got a series on the innovations that are going to save us from climate disaster, another one on how green finance is going to help pay for it all, and a fantastic audio documentary about the ozone hole, how it was fixed, and the lessons we can learn from that for how to fix climate change. Thanks for listening to Climate Solutions from the European Investment Bank.